Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
And welcome to the Raw Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by the Dudley Boys of What Culture, Michael Hamflett and Michael Sidgwick, here to review everything that happened on last night's episode of Monday Night Raw. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts, where we not only review Raw and SmackDown, but also NXT, AEW Dynamite, pay-per-views, we have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week completes with a bloody good quiz, of course, on Wrestle Culture. As I said, they're joined by Hamflett and Sidgwick to review just an atrocious episode of Monday Night Raw. Hamflett, four rematches, a match that's going to lead to another rematch next week. AJ Styles getting pinned by Jackson Bloody Riker, and Rhea Ripley not understanding how a beat the clock match works. Awful.
It must be because I pickled my brain with 12 hours of drinking over the weekend after virtually a year off. But I found this to be probably the most tolerable Raw of 2021. It obviously speaks to the low bar because we have our little chats before we hit record. And I immediately feel very much like an odd man out that it's just been another disastrous Monday on this just disastrous show with no hope, no future, no heart to it whatsoever. But we've made no secret of the fact that we sometimes take little shortcuts. You can watch these slightly sped up sometimes. And with a load of matches and a lot less gaga than you get on your average week, still loads because there's always loads, but less than the average, I found this the watchable version of WWE Dreck rather than something that I've come to just dread of a Tuesday morning.
How many pints did you have? You sound like shit.
Too many, mate. I've worked out, done some maths that, so this is day three of a hangover. So 4 hours of drinking equates to 1 day of being rough. So I'll send you a picture after we've recorded of the table of pints that five of us managed to amass after 6 hours in the same pub. Good time, though.
You didn't answer my question. Give us a ballpark figure of how many pints you had.
I reckon it was 14, maybe. But we had like we had Jaegers as well because it was just overexcitement. The bit in the bar that they gave us, like, they ended up being open till like 1-2 in the morning, nice and spaced out from other people. It was just like, oh Christ, clubs are back. This is even better than pubs. So just we had like a little space for our own little dance floor. So then that's when you start buying shots as well. I'm too old, aren't I? That's the problem. It's always the problem.
You're an old bitch.
I'm an old soak, is what I am.
Little bitch. I mean, 14 pints, I'd be like on my arse. Speaking of on arses, my God. The thing about this show is that quite obviously it was inoffensive, I guess, on some level compared to other wretched editions of this show, purely because there was more matches than promos, and the promos are inherently either awful or completely unremarkable. Like, I challenge even the most enthused subterranean mutant out there to go back and watch a Raw from 5 weeks ago. Will you tell me what Drew McIntyre said? It's just so nondescript at its least offensive. So there was more wrestling, and because the wrestlers are really good, there were two very good matches on this show, right? More than what you usually get. I guess if you're being generous, you could probably say on the back of it, well, there's probably minute by minute more good than bad on this show. So what are you complaining about? The wrestling was such on this show, in one match in particular, that I resent watching when I saw that goddamn finish. It just sort of formalizes how bad this show is. It can't, none of it means anything. Even when it's good, it means nothing. Even when it's very good, it is a total, literal waste of your time. I resent last week. I usually just resent what I'm watching. I literally resent what I was asked to do last week, given what happened on this week's show. And it was still really good wrestling. I can't deal with this show anymore.
Yeah, this is the
it's
thing.
It's impossible for me to like. I just simply resent it.
We got a tweet this morning as part of our Twitter questions on the news that said, Raw was good, but what do you think about Rick Boogs on SmackDown? You can probably guess what I think about Rick Boogs on SmackDown. But I said, well, it wasn't good. Because like you say, look, as Sidgwick is often saying, and both of you, to be fair, if you just let the wrestlers wrestle, they'll probably come out with some good stuff because they're just great. But the problem is, even on this show, like, I was in a mood after the first match because I was like, oh, cool, yeah, Kingston versus McIntyre. That's interesting. They've just given us that straight away to decide who's going to be the new number one contender. And it went like 22 minutes and we didn't get a result. So anything that happened, even if it had been one of the greatest matches on Monday Night Raw, it doesn't really matter because there's no result there. Then we get like four, that leads to a rematch. And honestly, Charlotte Flair versus Asuka, you know, it should be one. I should be bouncing off the walls that I get to watch that. In reality, I was like, oh, I don't really care because I've had how many different rematches of this? And why? Well, we'll get into it. But why does Charlotte Flair get a title match off the back of beating Asuka this week when Asuka beat her last week? Inexplicable that. And then all the other stuff, like the main event, I was like, well, I've no investment in this whatsoever. I've seen it a million times. And well, I'm gonna just blow my top when we get to the Reginald stuff. Sorry, Sid, do you want to say something, mate?
No, that's all right, it's all right, it's fine. I just want to say one thing, and that is it's all well and good us saying, oh, there was a very good to excellent 20-minute match later on in the night that did have a clean finish. Do you think in front of a real crowd in about 2 months' time, you get a booking decision like 22 minutes just brought to a stunning, abrupt, meaningless anti-climax, which is just purely, purely lazy pretext to do the exact same thing next week because they have content obligations to fulfill without any creativity with which to do it. Do you think after that first match and the way in which it ended, the live crowd watching it isn't just going to go, this?
Mm.
I'm not going to invest in the next match because the longer it goes, the more you're expected to get excited, you're probably just going to get shafted.
Yeah.
Like they're going to sour on this booking in the live crowd, and it's going to be hilarious watching actual fans out of jail. The pandemic is, we're on the way out of it. We're still in the present tense, which casts everything, even Double or Nothing, with a slightly bit of an overcast sky. But we're still like, the vaccines are working. That's good. The rollout isn't... Basically, people are going to be feeling like they're out of jail and then they're going to want to just go straight home after about an hour of a three-hour Raw with booking like this. It's a total waste of my time.
I think that's a particularly relevant point this week because I thought... they weren't awesome, but I think WWE's been a pretty effective job of telling people that the shows are coming back.
Christ, like, I went hard.
Like, introduction, SmackDown on Friday, the little, almost like they weren't half as fun, but, like, it reminded me of the old, like, Superstar special report segments where you would have, like, Superstar, oh, we'll see you in this arena, so-and-so, and so-and-so, all that sort of good stuff. But what they're doing is selling what they can't deliver, which is a good time. They're selling the return of something that you think you want, but when you get there, it's not going to be the thing you want because it's going to be a version of this. They're not going to, I mean, maybe they will, maybe they'll try. Maybe it'll be a Vince Russo, Eric Bischoff, Nitro. They can't hit a hard reset button on this product. They can't. The content churn has made that impossible. No matter what you like in the first segment, me and Wilborn did a podcast about John Cena return on SmackDown. John Cena could be in the first segment of SmackDown. It could be like, whoa, this is totally brand new and cool, and here's John Cena. It's going to go back to SmackDown after that. And like a 2-minute women's match that not enough people are criticizing, or far too much dialogue in a Jimmy and Jey Uso vignette, or whatever. Like, it's still going to be WWE afterwards. And what they're selling at the moment is that release from prison, as you talk about, It is absolutely what they can't deliver when the sort of reality hits home. It's like the disappointment is going to be quicker than ever if they don't have, like, and you just can't see it. If they don't have, say, 6 or 7 carefully plotted out, lined up TV shows for these first, what, like 4 weeks of live shows back, it's going to be an absolutely disastrous look for them. We've seen what happens before. I'll invoke AEW, so it's not you getting in trouble, Sidgwick.
Okay.
You know what happened when Revolution got pushed back 2 weeks, and you kind of felt it because the Dynamites are so measured. You felt that they were having to stretch things out or come up with other things to kind of interrupt what they'd had planned. WWE doesn't operate like that. They can't map out, let's say, 8 television shows, 4 Raws, 4 SmackDowns, to ensure that the first 8 live shows are like really well mapped, a quality run up the SummerSlam, so that pay-per-view feels special. Like, I wouldn't buy a ticket expecting any of that. This company's incapable of that.
I love the fact that whenever we do these Q&As, which I really enjoy doing and answering your guys' questions, but people say, like, when fans come back, is it going to get good again? Like, are they really going to try hard? And what here's the perfect personification of it. It's on this show, they're there. You've got, like, Braun Strowman and Mandy Rose and whoever saying, oh, yeah, we're going to be coming soon, and oh, I can't wait to get back into arenas. And on this show, they like went back. Like they sort of went, oh, hold off on the stuff that we have been doing on Raw. They think what they've been doing on Raw over the last weeks is the good stuff that they now got to hold back on for when fans come back. It's not like, yeah, we'll get all this bollocks out of the way, and then, you know, when fans come back, we'll actually give them the matches they want. No. What they did last week, what they did 4 weeks ago, was the good stuff. And this week they were like, oh, yeah, we'll do a 25-minute match that goes to a no contest because, you know, we want to save that good stuff for when fans... It's just an atrocious show. It is torturous to watch this. And I would not watch this if it was my job. I would have quit years ago, not months ago.
I'll be generous, right? I do think that even by their standards, they are wheel spinning, with the idea being that they... The reason why they've done Hell in a Cell and swapped it around with Money in the Bank is because they realise Hell in a Cell acts as a way to do a boring match again and make it slightly less boring in the minds of the audience. So our wheel's spinning to get through the obligation. There's not a sense of, oh, what can we do this week? Like, there's no sense of their favourite fucking word, opportunity. We've got an opportunity to do something cool this week because we all love our jobs and we're passionate about the process. There's literally none of that. It radiates through the goddamn screen. Even by their standards, they are wheel spinning. I will say that I think they are going to do one good set of shows by WWE standards on the Monday and Friday, with the idea being that they'll start putting new combinations together. But still by week two, you're still going to get the same bollocks. Let's crack on, because I've got a gimmick for this week.
Okay. I'm excited for this now. So the show opens. Good.
It's actually bad audio, so.
Okay. The show opened with MVP introducing WWE champion Bobby Lashley. He's got Lashley's ladies with him. They walk down to the ring and they air a recap of what happened last week with the open challenge and Kingston and McIntyre getting involved and Kingston pinning the world champion. And then they come back and all the women go, boo! They talk about the fact that they're going to be leaving the Thunderdome in July. All the fans are going to get to see their world champion, Bobby Lashley, in person. MVP described Drew McIntyre as a black cloud that was following them around. Lashley said, I beat McIntyre at WrestleMania. I beat both McIntyre and Strowman at Backlash. I want to move on. That's why I issued an open challenge last week. And MVP said, the scrawny cartoon character Kofi Kingston accepted. And then the bloody black cloud had to show up again. He showed up again. He interrupted Drew McIntyre. He said, nobody should be surprised to see him. He wanted to regain the title. If it weren't for MVP, who I think just shouted, if I'm not mistaken, which I think managers are allowed to do. Anyway, if it wouldn't have been for him, McIntyre would have won it back at WrestleMania. If it weren't for Strowman, he would have won it at Backlash. He said that Lashley couldn't beat him on his own. And he wondered if he even had the balls to face him. He even asked the women if Lashley had got any balls. And then Lashley and McIntyre argued. New Day interrupted. Kingston came out and went, remember, I've just seen it, Kofi, mate. I know it's not your fault, but I've literally watched you pin him. And he went, do you remember when I pinned Lashley last week? Lashley said, oh, yeah, you should thank McIntyre for that. McIntyre said, "You're welcome." Kingston said, "Oh, I don't need you. I can win without you." He didn't ask for his help, didn't want his help. And he answered the challenge last week because, long-term storytelling, guys, he never got his WWE Championship rematch. Brilliant. All the breadcrumbs that have been laid out.
Pancake crumbs. Remember, we crushed them and nothing happened.
Remember when, like, literally weeks after Kofi lost the title, they initiated a protocol where there wasn't going to be automatic rematches because that's actual long-term storytelling. Cough.
Anyway, Kingston said McIntyre received rematch after rematch after rematch after rematch. Now it's his turn to go to the back of the line because Kingston did something that he couldn't do over many, many months. Out comes Postman Pierce, who announces it is going to be Kingston versus McIntyre with the winner facing Lashley for the title at Hell in a Cell. MVP liked this idea. They pulled up some sofas up on the stage and they sat down and we all thought, oh, good. Straight away into a number one contenders match and we're all going to get a satisfactory conclusion. But before we get to that, Sid, your thoughts on this opening promo and series of interruptions?
Right. Beyond what I'm about to say, which is setting up my gimmick of the podcast, I might just start doing it every week. This show isn't worth my time anymore. It isn't. So I'm going to set a limit of 45 seconds outside of this preamble to set it up for later in the broadcast of this podcast. 45 seconds for every time you come to me.
Okay.
Other than the five-star review, because I will take what we are about to cover with far more seriousness than this. So 45 seconds, go. Drew McIntyre is just a dick. Drew McIntyre is a skid mark. Drew McIntyre is so entitled, despite the fact that he's been jobbed clean in the middle. I will, since in Raw does this, I will do the exact same thing. Last week I said, can you imagine John Moxley getting beat clean in the middle with no interference, just going, I deserve it, I deserve it, I deserve it, I deserve it. Just know, because they don't want you to think he's a dick. WWE don't mind if you think he's a dick because they just don't recognize decent characteristics. It's just churn, 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 churn. That makes McIntyre look like a total and utter dick. Kofi Kingston looks like he's trying to sell himself as a winner, even though clearly he cheated to win. It's just all a total mess. Right, that's it.
Mostly awful, yeah. I'll tell you one thing I liked. I don't even know if WWE realised what they were doing here, but they have sort of dangled something in Bobby Lashley wanting to be champion when fans return. I think that is a worthwhile thing for WWE especially to say. What they're doing is burying their own Thunderdome, of course, which otherwise we've been told is the greatest way to enjoy live entertainment in the world right now. But wrestlers should absolutely be thinking like that. Rarely does WWE feel remotely connected to the real world. Remember how long it went before they even mentioned there was a pandemic happening? And yet, for them to say, you know what's more important than holding this title? It's being the one to hold this title when the people come back. I want that. Like that, that title is so valueless at the moment that that felt like a bigger achievement. And I bought into that. That's going to put stakes in these title matches that otherwise just generally don't exist because the belt's got no value. So I thought that was interesting that they would include that in the dialogue. It's going to make every title match matter a little bit more. July is going to appear like this sort of quite unique deadline that they're never going to be able to use again. Rest was rubbish. You cannot use a phrase like dark cloud so much when you're unaware that half of your audience probably feels it and doesn't want to be told it outright. It's really, really dangerous. You get ever closer to Roman Reigns and Drew McIntyre, especially with no crowds to be able to read how they're responding to him. Really dangerous scripting. I've already picked on the fact that Kofi Kingston's talking about an automatic rematch when he lost the title right around the time that the company was binning off automatic rematches. Luckily, what lends all of this a bit of credibility is at least the match they set up had a payoff. So yes, it's all fluffy dialogue, but at least what we got in the end was satisfactory.
22 sodding minutes, during which Michael Hamflett, Adnan Virk said, I caught this, guys, what was Kofi Mania like back in the day?
Stick it on Peacock. It was...
I realise time has no meaning, but come on. Anyway, look, they work well together, Kingston and McIntyre. Obviously, McIntyre had the strength advantage. Kingston was trying to sneak out and get little, you know, speedy little reversals in there. Kingston got reverse Alabama slammed on the edge of the ring by the babyface. Of course he did. Kingston tried for a guillotine. McIntyre countered that into a vertical suplex. Nice bit where Kingston comes off the top, goes for a flying crossbody, and McIntyre catches him and nails him with a Michinoku driver. McIntyre hits this huge spinebuster, a deadlift sit-out powerbomb. Then he posts himself, because of course he does. Kingston frog splashes onto McIntyre's back, gets a two count. They go to the outside, and then you think, yeah, 20 minutes of my time's been wasted, because we can all see where this is going. McIntyre's in Lashley's face. He turns around, trust fall from Kingston onto McIntyre, into Lashley. They get back in the ring. Kingston gets an SOS for two, and then immediately in comes Lashley and MVP to attack Kingston and McIntyre. It goes to a no contest after 22 sodding minutes, and post-match, Lashley gets hit with a Trouble in Paradise and a Claymore, but nothing matters, Michael Hamflett.
Nothing matters, man. Ban... been this forever. This finish of the heel champion thinking he's got one over on both guys, it's never ever good ever. You get a triple threat at the end of it, or you get what we got later on here, which is a rematch. It just doesn't get the champion out of jail. No champion has ever watched every other time that this has happened to see it happening, especially not when your champion isn't even like, I'm not giving like the cowardly heel a pass. I'm not. But when it's a cowardly heel, it tends to be that cowards are a bit thick as well. And they're so blinded by their cowardice that they make stupid decisions. None of this is Bobby Lashley. Absolutely none of it. Guy's a monster. Like, when pushed, he absolutely batters people. So it was particularly stupid here. And what happens is you come away from a 21-minute match that was quite stiff, and they, you know, beat the out of each other, comes away with you starting your review was, you know, they worked well together. It's because the ending sort of takes all the air out of the balloon. Yeah. Like, you'll never ever watch it again because the finish, like, has made it so that it's all irrelevant anyway. And you reflect on your own experience, which is what this is, an emotional view and experience. You reflect on it and you're just critical of yourself instead of, you know, there's me and the fool for investing it in the first place. And then as the weeks go on and the weeks go on, you're just investing it less. So I enjoyed this at a distance, almost knowing that I wouldn't be satisfied by the end. Not a literal waste of time, because that's all that this product is half the time, but it felt like a waste of mine by the end.
Start. Drew McIntyre needs to actually sell how awesome that Michinoku driver, he needs to win a match or two or three or four with that and establish it as a secondary finish, because it looks like death and he's kind of just putting in there to do a cool spot because he's thinking, Christ, okay, because it's 3 hours, they're tacking on 10 minutes, so I'm going to have to do some new things. I would not ever put someone like Kofi Kingston up against Drew McIntyre when there's already a feeling of, Christ, what entitled knobhead he's looking. Oh, here's a good idea to further turn him heel gradually in the eyes of the audience. We'll put him up against someone who he looks like a bit of a dick for dominating as much as he is. It's a total waste of time. 22 minutes, that meant nothing. Just transparent creative bankruptcy. Finished.
I wonder what that was for a second, then I realised. We got a graphic saying, don't worry, guys, Asuka versus Charlotte Flair again tonight. Can't believe I'm getting annoyed about them giving us that, but it's just WWE doing what they do best. And then we see Charlotte Flair arriving, Rhea Ripley confronting her backstage. Nikki Cross comes in and looks like a sodding child. She reckons she can beat either of them. They're both like, who are you? Charlotte says, oh, I can beat you in 2 minutes if I didn't have a match already scheduled to tonight. Ripley said, that's why people don't like you. You talk down to people. Charlotte said, well, why don't you go and beat her in 2 minutes? She went, well, I'll be happy to. And then we got the match. Sorry, Hamflett, before we get to the match, I have to get your reaction there.
That's why people don't like you. Oh, because that thing you just did. Yeah, I'm going to do that thing too. Yeah, that's why people don't like you anymore or know what to think about you. I hate this Rhea Ripley character. I hate her. Like, I don't get her. I don't think she gets her.
No.
Christ almighty. And then the booking of this. It wasn't even like, Sidgwick is doing a better job of booking Beat the Clock in his podcast than they managed to on this episode of Raw.
Start. Nikki Cross is just a total geek. An absolute geek who is... And it's fine, you can be a geek, but don't embrace being a geek like she did later in the night. Charlotte Flair is, it's an all-heel feud.
Yeah.
Who's the biggest tosser? Is it Rhea Ripley or is it Charlotte Flair? Who's the most detestable person who's got Change the Channel heat? Well, I'll tell you what, like, I'm pressing that button harder to change the channel. I'm going to press that little bit harder for Charlotte Flair, though, because she's that little bit more successful. Like, basically, I'm going to press my nail into my thumb, changing the channel for both of them. So, realistically, mission accomplished. Oh, Christ, I beat the clock.
Hey. Hey, Rhea, did you get less detestable now you're stood next to Charlotte Flair? Jesus. So, yeah. So, we get the match, and I was sat there thinking, what are they going to do here? Because, like, you've got the world champion there, but you've also got Nikki Cross, who's a former, you know, tag champion, you know, great star in NXT as well. How are they going to do this? And, well, they did it. So they had a big 2 minutes up on the screen and in the corner of your screen as well. And they just said, if Nikki Cross can survive Rhea Ripley in 2 minutes, she wins. And, like, they sort of, you know, Rhea Ripley outpowers her initially, and she's there sort of tapping the imaginary watch on her wrist. And I was like, right, we're just going to get a riptide out of nowhere here for her to win the match. No, what happened was Nikki Cross got some offense in, jawbreaker, flying crossbody, and Ripley got annoyed that he was actually trying in this match rather than just running away for 2 minutes and forgot the match she was in. I think that was the story. Rhea Ripley forgot a beat the clock challenge a minute into it when it's 2 minutes. She drop kicks her, shoulder tackles her, puts her in the corner and just stomps on her, and then the timer runs out. And she goes, oh, I knew I was something I was meant to be doing. I was meant to be beating her in the beat the clock challenge. Nikki Cross acts like she's just won the world title. And Charlotte comes down, and then Nikki Cross does, and I don't like it when Rhea Ripley does it, does her na-na-na-na-na finger-waving thing to Charlotte. And my head pretty much imploded, if I'm perfectly honest at that point. Sidge, I don't think I could have booked Rhea Ripley worse than what they've done with her since she's gone up to Raw.
Start. Nikki Cross is the second of three babyfaces on this show that embody such awful, childish, toddler characteristics. And I hate all three of them. Drew McIntyre, Nikki Cross, and God damn it, we will get to Ricochet, that complete and utter dickhead. I hate him. Rhea Ripley is a total moron. There is no winner in this match. No one comes out of it looking good. The only person who comes out of this even vaguely happy with the slightest bit of dopamine is Nick Khan, because it's like, right, okay, another 2 minutes of content. We can get that total up and we can flog it to Peacock. Look how much extra content we've produced for you for the next meeting or whatever they have. I've beat the clock with 3 seconds to spare.
Yeah. Miserable booking of all of everybody. Everybody. Like, I was with you, Wilborn. I didn't think it was going to get much worse than Rhea Ripley doing those faces after the match at Backlash. This was more annoying. And like, Nikki Cross is the only one this is an earnest baby face out of all three of them. And she became the most irritating of all of them. After a 2 minute virtual squash, Rhea Ripley has a 1 minute memory, because it's not just that she forgot what she had to do in a 2 minute match. This was set up about a minute earlier. It was like that one even or even yet in between it. That was all she had to remember. Like, it's not like this was like 3 weeks ago. It's like, oh Christ, yeah, this is that thing that we talked about. It's like the last segment.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Right, then we got McIntyre and Kingston barging into Postman Pierce's office and going, "What's you happening out there? I know we were just fighting for 25 minutes, but we're both here. We're both really grumpy now." And he said, "Oh, you get a rematch next week." And they went, "Oh, okay."
Thanks, Dad.
Yeah. No word, by the way, at this point, no word on MVP and Bobby Lashley being banned from ringside. This went, "Oh, okay, fair enough. Well, I think I'll win." Another one, "I think I'll win." And that was it, Sige. Start the clock.
Thanks, Dad. Stop the clock. I mean, I will start in earnest. People don't get it. Like, people do not get it. When I say that AEW Dynamite is fundamentally a superior show to this, it's because I take the jobbers on AEW Dynamite more seriously than the main eventers on Raw or SmackDown. And the reason is because they're not like daddy asking their dad for matches or resolutions to their little stupid squabbling bitch problems, right? And at least the jobbers, the babyface jobbers, if they get their dicks knocked into the dirt on Dynamite or Dark Elevation, they'll accept the result and there won't be assholes about it like Ricochet, Cancel.
Dad and Pierce. That's all I've got. He's no longer that, like, and this was generous, but there was like a few weeks where he was the sort of, "Oh," I thought, like, "I can't do your voice with one. Literally, my throat is too sore." But that, like, "Is he the best authority figure ever?" No, he's every single other authority figure ever. That's what he is. Every single other one ever. The squabble with Sonya Deville is terrible now. Clearly, like, they've lost interest in that a little bit. They're just like splitting the time across both shows. And yeah, wrestlers, even Drew McIntyre, kowtows to Dad.
Then we got Charlotte Flair versus Asuka.
Skip.
I'm going to skip a goddamn match that they put so much work, physical and mental work into this. The counters are great. The action was pretty great. The idea is that they've locked into this dynamic where they are working with each other every week and they've got the goddamn good grace to fold that into their matches. They are doing counters to counters to counters. The idea is that they can never decide who really is the better. So they have the goddamn grace again to put like a bit of struggle behind it.
I'll spill out the room, man.
Despairing through this match that they can't put the other one away. When will it end? They are telling a decent in-ring story that's germane to how horrible the booking is. That's how good they are. But I can't possibly care because this match erased 20 of the most pointless minutes of my life spent last week. If you're going to do this, do it in 4 minutes. But you can't because there's 3 hours.
What's the thinking that the symmetrical finish is good as well? Because surely somebody shouldn't be getting captured with what they were beaten with 1 week earlier and then there actually be ramifications off the back of this one. I think they've used that finish to fool less discerning viewers into believing that this is really quite clever. It's the stupidest possible outcome. Come with a kick out. That's how that should work.
Yeah. Charlotte targeted Asuka's leg. They worked really well together. But in the end, Asuka went for an Asuka lock. Charlotte rolled through. Cradle, pinfall. There you go. Don't want to talk about it anymore. So instead, enough of all that. It's now time for this.
It's short. It's crap. It's wrestling related. The 5-star review. Nailed it.
This 5-star review is brought to you by Bradders. If you want to suggest something short, crap, and wrestling-related, subscribe to What Culture Wrestling and leave us a 5-star review like Bradders, who writes, "Excellent podcast, fellas. I've been watching the Graps since Survivor Series 1992, and during this crap sandwich of a pandemic, your tireless efforts to inform and entertain have been very much appreciated. I feel Adam's relentless enthusiasm, maybe not this week, radiating through my headphones, while Mr. Sidgwick's grounded cynicism strikes a lovely balance. Last but by no means least, Hamlet's unending praise of Bret Hart and the New Generation era always strikes a chord. The zombie brand partnership at Backlash got me thinking. For a 5-star review, perhaps you'd consider that time RoboCop freed Sting from a cage in WCW. Keep up the good work, guys. This is the highlight of the Raw review for me this week, Hamlet. And tell us about the history, the backstory, the legacy of RoboCop in WCW.
it is closer to zombies than I think even the most ardent WCW fan would like to believe. This one, they were promoting RoboCop 2, a great kick-ass ridiculous sequel to a really fun first film, but a film, something that was not real. And in order to promote a film, to co-promote, much like with the zombies at Backlash, rather than getting an actor or people involved in the film to just, like you say, be like elevated versions themselves, maybe talk about it, maybe like, hey, Sting, you're as tough as RoboCop. Let's talk a bit about RoboCop. They brought the pretend robotic policeman to a wrestling show to be a danger. He was a mate of Sting, basically. It was as if, like, Sting's so hot around the Hollywood sets that he's made friends with all the stars. Like, who? RoboCop. Not anybody with, like, Hollywood pedigree. No, like, Oscar winners. No, the actual character. It's wrestling, so you were just asked to believe, like the wrestlers, that the character in the film was real.
Hey, Stinger, we're going to the pub after the break. Do you want to come? Yeah, it's all right if I bring my friend. Oh, yeah, who is it? RoboCop.
I just...
At least he could drink neck oil.
In the case of Army of the Dead and RoboCop 2, these are, like, incredibly violent films being cross-promoted with the idea of it's a kids' TV show, pro wrestling. Like, it wasn't WCW, they were gearing to a kids' audience. WWE is, despite the paedophile clowns and some of the things on the show, but fundamentally, they want kids to watch it and they expect kids to watch it. And the idea is, oh, kids should like this. Like, what? Whatever next? Like, what we're going to see? Oh, we're going to do cross-promotion with David Cronenberg and Adnan Virk's head is going to explode. In a bit of cross-promotional excess. Like, whatever next? Can they not cross-promote something that is even vaguely... That the target audience is actually allowed to watch by their parents? I know the 55-year-old Stan Martino marks are probably going, all right, okay, well, I forgot my Netflix password. What was it, dear? It's 1, 2, 3, 4, you senile bitch. The people who actually watch it are allowed to watch Army of the Dead or RoboCop. Please, just for one less layer of insanity for my brain to comprehend, can you just cross-promote something that the target audience is allowed to watch from mummy and daddy?
I watched the clip we're about to talk about, and then suggested videos on YouTube. There was also a promo that Sting cut with RoboCop, where RoboCop pulls out his gun. I was like, well, that's going to be, that will level the playing field. Four on two, it's a bit unfair. That. Oh, no, he's got a semi-automatic weapon. It's fine. We're all good.
What coke-snorting police officials get murdered to death in RoboCop, which is a pitch-black satire of how fundamentally broken everything is.
Things hit him with the scorpion death ray.
People getting, like, mutated and toxic ooze. I know some of the WWE fans can identify with that, but still, it's meant to be for the kids.
Also, I've got a bit of a surprise for you in a minute. But this was Capital Combat, was it? It was just taking place at. And is it JR on commentary?
Yeah, Jim Ross and one of his favourite ever partners, a lovely old fella called Bob Caudle. He simply doesn't belong in a wrestling world with RoboCop.
JR says, wow, great ovation for RoboCop. That made me laugh. I just stopped 3 seconds in. Whoa, great ovation for RoboCop. Oh, as he makes his way to the ring. Wait a minute, the horseman already out. They just threw Sting in the cage. They threw Sting in that cage that Cornette was in. Sting has been caged by the horseman, but here comes RoboCop, Bob. Why was there a cage there? Just to tell people.
Jim Cornette was in it from the last match on the show was where, like, he couldn't interfere. So he was placed in a cage. And the horseman, famed for bludgeoning people and breaking people's legs in car doors, saw that cage and thought, perfect. That's what I'm going to do.
There could not be a more suitable visual illustration of how far the horseman had just completely descended. The fact that horseman in cages, right? War games. Right, what we're also going to do is trap Dusty in cages and absolutely kill him if it weren't for Nikolai Koloff coming out. Here's a cage. It's tiny and its bars are made of rubber. not quite the same. That should have clued you in to the fact that this is rubbish.
Sid's still in his tux. Full tux.
What would have happened? I realise we do this often when they just randomly book matches for the main event, but what would have happened if the Four Horsemen hadn't attacked Sting and put him in a cage? Would Robocop just come out? Because he couldn't go up the steps, could he?
Smile and wave, please go and see Robocop 2. I like that. What would have happened if they had put him in the cage and Robocop wasn't there? They'd have left and then somebody would have got him out of the cage. Oh, Horseman, bloody hell.
Bob comes on, gives us a rundown of who's there. Sid Vicious, Ollie Anderson, Arn Anderson. They all attacked him and they threw him in the... I think they've thrown him in the cage. They've established that. But look at Robocop. He's approaching. Slowly, very slowly he is. They're backing away from him. Oh, JR's like, well, he's not intimidated, Bob. Robocop's going right to the cage. And then, I don't know what's being said. I listened back to this. I couldn't catch it. Someone shouts, you're going to be a bucket of balls when we finish with you.
Sting's rubbish patter. I love Sting. I love Surfer Sting more than Crow Sting. I'm a Surfer Sting truther, but my God, some of his patter was absolutely abject.
I think that was Ollie Anderson grabbing a mic and going, you're going to be a bucket of bolts when we're finished with you. But it sounds like he's screaming like, you stupid bollocks, or something like that.
Well, Sting is saying something, so he's either been synced up with Anderson, worse than the Shockmaster was. I thought it was going to be a bucket of bones, but bucket of bolts. Oh, like, yeah. It's not a robot cop. There's no actual bolts. It's like a more sophisticated outfit.
The horsemen are back with a wrench. Are they going to hit him? They're going to just very carefully dismantle him.
Oh. So anyway... Finally, in the time it's taken us to discuss this, Robocop got to the steel cage and he puts his hands on a steel cage and he bends the bars and the door just slowly opens. And he goes, well, I better take it off his hinges. Just walk out the door. It's fine.
After Cedric said that, I'm just thinking about how, considering this era of WCW had the Juicer and Arachnoman, I'm surprised they didn't have a robot cop.
Robot cop?
Get Buff Bagwell in a robot outfit.
JR says, wow, what strength by Robocop. Now do you want a piece of him, Horseman? And Bob says, yeah, look at Ollie and Arn and Big Sid back up. The expression on their faces, what the heck have we got here? He does a little voice when he says that. And JR says, well, they say there'll be another day when Ollie Anderson saw Robocop pull that steel door right off the cage. They said, we better wait for another day. Sting and Robocop have asserted themselves here. Sting looks phenomenal. He looks to be 100%, Bob. He and his buddy Robocop, the best friends, him and Robocop. I tell you, the horse, I like this look. This is my favorite bit. I tell you, the horsemen wanted no part of either of those, especially the Stinger and Robocop. Oh, dear. And that's it. That's literally it, isn't it, Amphert?
Yeah, that's your lot. Then we get a smiling wave, and then it's back to... So Sting was going to win the world title from Ric Flair. That's why he was feuding with the Horsemen. It was to be the this decision that had been fought over by WCW management for years. Great American Bash 1990 was to anoint Sting. Basically, for Ric Flair to pass the torch and effectively ease into retirement in 1990. the same as the Warrior coming through at the same time in WWE. It was just like, Sting's the guy now. Have we got anything on the board for that last big push? Just Sting being Ric Flair. And then they just point at a picture of Robocop. Plus question mark equals cash. Sting did not get over as world champion and lost the title back to Ric Flair, who came to the ring dressed as the Black Scorpion in a spaceship.
So it's a little, normally I just go straight to the comment section here, but I found a little bonus footage from a brilliant YouTube series called Are You Serious?
Oh, God. Road Dog.
Presented by Josh Matthews and Road Dog.
Oh, Christ, two of the worst people alive.
We just tried to, basically steal WrestleCrap's bit, and it was just like, oh, they're out. It's our footage. Off.
Two of the worst people of all time.
They have some patter with Puppet H, I think it is.
Yeah.
Beforehand.
there's gentle, like, every now and then, like, they'll make a joke about the puppet not putting anybody over, and it's like, best hope Triple H doesn't see this, otherwise somebody's getting fired. Joke's on you, Josh Matthews. It actually happened.
Did he say that? Well, he's out on you on Facebook being transphobic, so I'm pretty sure he feels entitled to say anything he wants. Road dog, one of the dirt worst humans.
Yeah, it's awful, this. This is worse than the actual footage, is them trying to make patter out of it. They go, Capital Combat. Wasn't that the pay-per-view from last year? Oh, no, that was Capital Punishment. Road Dog goes, don't worry, this is two. And Josh Manley goes, wait, what? Road Dog goes, punishment. Because, punishing watching it.
Improv chimps, was it?
It's honestly, it's like, you can't see this, obviously, but it's just like, ha, 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 ha. Michael Sidgwick, is that Kevin Nash under there? Sidgwick responds, no, he hasn't torn his quads yet. Literally one of the lines. Road Dog, slut shaming a pinwheel pyro. Pinwheel pyro, very manly.
What?
God, I hate Road Dog. He might be my least, I think he's overtaking Stephanie and people I hate the most.
What is Road Dog's problem with everything?
Didn't make it. He was over for like 1998 and elements of 1999. And he's just a catchphrase.
Mm-hmm. Don't lock up Sting, they say, as Sting's been thrown in the cage by the Four Horsemen. Lock up whoever wrote this segment. a shoot on the
floor. Like that, is it any wonder that NXT is in the state that it's in?
There's bits where they shoot on Robocop being stabbed by Sid's scissors and the Four Horsemen not being in WWE's Hall of Fame. And Josh Mathen goes, oh, awkward.
I'm pretty sure they were better than DX.
Also, I'm going to save my favourite bit, so I'm going to jump ahead. At the end, when they're walking out, Road Dog goes, thought they were going to kiss there for a moment. They got weirdly close. What are you doing? What's going on?
He hates them.
Yeah.
He hates them, honestly. He is a horrible human being.
But my favourite...
God, oh. Oh, Christ. Ugh. Fuck off. Seriously.
But then, like, he doesn't totally... He's probably got your stopwatch. All right, I'll watch it for 45 seconds, but then no more. See what it is that I really hate the most about it.
God, my finger slipped off to this. We start.
Oh, they're still doing it. Oh. Look, watch.
But my favourite bit was...
Robocop's balls deep now. I have to keep watching it.
Now, we've gone this far. I might as well watch the end now. But the bit where Robocop's bending the bars, Josh Matthews, I'll tell you what, he's got some zingers in his pockets. He goes... Well, those bars made of Twizzlers.
And oh my God, I hate them both. I hate them both so much. And the thing is, I don't know anything about Josh Matthews other than the fact that he's so bad at what he does. Right? He might be like the nicest guy who's got like nice values. It's like be excellent to each other human being. And yet he's almost more annoying than the guy who's got the worst values of anyone in WWE almost. And think of the goddamn ground that covers. Oh, Josh Matthews, man.
My favourite bit comes next.
Remember like when NXT first happened and Cole was playing the heel and Josh Matthews thought, all right, my natural role then is to be like, oh, shut up, Cole. And then he realised, obviously, Vince just wasn't watching or didn't care. So he just thought, oh, I'm going to be just like Michael Cole. Yeah, you stupid idiot, restless. It was like, no, nobody wants to listen to that.
Women.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Tell him, Michael.
So Matthews goes, what, those bars made of Twizzlers? And then Road Dog goes, flimsy, like the majority of WCW's booking in the 90s. Hang on, when you get your ass handed to you by WCW.
Oh, my God. I want to die. So this is my reprieve from the imminent death I wish for. Why are you putting Josh Matthews in the mix?
Well, I went to the comments.
No one asked for this on the review. No one said, listen to Josh Matthews pop zingers. I didn't ask for this. I wasn't prepared for this either.
I think I want a 5-star review on a Josh Matthews segment next, or a Road Dog segment, either or. Because the comments section,
Dim Joe. We're going there now. Oh, these do not reflect the views of myself, the Daddy Boys, or anyone at What Culture Wrestling, of course. Certainly this doesn't reflect us. It must be awesome being around Road Dogg. He is hilarious. Puppet H is great also.
When you started that, I thought you were going to say something. It must be awesome being around RoboCop.
Never mind all that. What about Road Dogg?
No.
Mr. Red 88. Sid, what would you say is the biggest missed opportunity in wrestling?
The Invasion.
Yeah, fair enough. Absolutely fair shout. Not Mr. Red 88, who writes, RoboCop should have helped Sting at WrestleMania 31 when Triple H came out as the Terminator. Biggest missed opportunity in wrestling.
I mean,
Megatron game was unbelievable.
Imagine, remember how long that sodding rant was? Imagine how long it would have taken RoboCop to get to the ring.
You see, on RoboCop versus Terminator on the Mega Drive, when their heads are just clean off, like they're just blood spatter everywhere. Imagine how many times they could have got Triple H for one of them. Head off.
Hawaiian Puncher says, every week this, Sige, as much as AEW be trying to bring back the past, I'm surprised they haven't tried this yet, LMAO.
Why did you come to me with that? See, you've put us in a mood. Having to just second-hand listen to Josh Matthews saying things.
This will cheer you up. Jawa 2 writes, this is inexplicable, by the way. No reference of this in the RoboCop video. Mean Street Posse MSP is just PMS rearranged.
Paul, okay. Okay. But the corporate ministry, PMS, MPS.
And final thing. Thanks once again to Bradders. If you want to suggest a 5-star review, What Culture Wrestling on iTunes, leave us a 5-star review, suggest something short, crap, and wrestling related. Route one for the final quote. Evo Man just writes, more like RoboCock.
Oh, Chris Morrison in the comment section.
Oh, God. Back to Monday Night Raw. MVP and Lashley have been summoned to Postman Pierce's office, who says, what kind of champion do you want to be? And yeah, he says he wants to represent Raw as champion. He's certainly better for it than Kingston and McIntyre. And Pierce went, right. Well, if you get involved in the Kingston McIntyre match next week, or even if you appear at ringside, you're suspended without pay for 90 days. Okay.
Like, say the Tron. And
who's going? Might be somebody playing a guitar. You know that that Bobby Lashley and MVP know. It's look, they've promised to finish here, but it speaks to what they have to do to promise to finish, doesn't it? Could they just not give finishes? Could they not just give you the matches?
Then we got a video package for the Shelton Benjamin Cedric Alexander feud, which I thought was over, if I'm honest. I thought they had a match. I thought they said we're going to have one match and then we're done. And Shelton won it. No.
Because this was never over.
And Cedric Alexander cut a promo on Benjamin where I think half the time his voice broke and he went, look at me, Shelton! Look at me! Hi, Shelton, look over here! I'm still in my prime. You're old. You're an old git. I can bat you. You're all good. And then he finished. And Corey Graves, who I thought was meant to back the heels. I thought that was his job on commentary, to be like, you know, like when he used to slag off Elias. And I was like, no, you're meant to like what he does. And then, yeah, he said Cedric Alexander had the charisma of a cinder block. So thanks for that. Thanks for that, Corey.
I'm convinced that was fed.
Yeah,
that was a fed line by a man who was, what the hell is he talking about, pal?
You better believe it was a fed line.
Yeah, it was a fed line.
Match went 12 minutes. Cedric Alexander versus Shelton Benjamin. Alexander takes him off the top with a really good Hurricanrana, to be fair. Benjamin's nailing him with a series of German suplexes, but Alexander pokes him in the eye and then hits the neuralizer for the victory. Sige, 45 seconds, off you go.
I would want to say start. Start. Nice enough match. Nice enough match. I didn't not want to listen to Cedric Alexander talk for as long as he did in that voice. It was so weird. It was not good television. It was not a good promo at all. The thing that struck with me far more than the match itself was the referee kept remonstrating with Shelton Benjamin, who was trying to get the match started. The referee was like, "Oh, no. You kept, honestly, if you watch, yeah. I watched them two and not the promo, and it's like, in the referee's mind, had Cedric Alexander talked all night long, then he would have been allowed to do that. He would have been allowed to do that. Given what happened later on the show, I kind of wish he did, because I would have just thought, oh, this is going to go all night. I'll just switch off.
Hamlet.
Well, it's 50-50 in the minute. Like, so we know Cedric's the baddie. He won with a poke to the eye to get control. But they've had this match. I've not misremembered. Have I? Shelton won fairly handily, fairly quickly.
And KO'd him backstage last week when he started being a knobhead again.
But this has happened later on in the calendar. So I guess that means, like, Cedric's had the last word.
Got a winner.
Aye. Yeah. Nice is about right, I think. This wasn't long enough to be one of them, like, the offensiveness of the first match. You know, you didn't get the 20-odd before a slightly disappointing finish. Cedric Alexander's not going to become a big star. He's not. Right, he's just, you can
he
just,
might not, but what about Gary the Goat Garbutt?
You can just see it already. Like, if you're going to put him in a mask and a bloody overalls, you might as well call him Bob Evans and go darker with the gimmick. But, like, Cedric Alexander is never going to be a star.
Walks into Vince's office. Cedric, you're the goat. Oh, thanks, boss. Gary the Goat Garbutt, that is. Right. The actual best part of the show came next. Best match, best 13 minutes on the show. Riddle versus Xavier Woods. Oh my God, give Xavier Woods a singles title. He's so good. Riddle looked great as well in this, to be fair. Great bit of grappling to start things off. Riddle showing off his strength. And then Woods, just reminding you of how ridiculously strong he is. I know Riddle's insane as well, but that bit where he pulled Riddle off the floor into a vertical suplex was just jaw-dropping. It's been shared all over social media today. Riddle fights back, knee strike. Woods then counters a Broderick attempt. Drop kicks him into the corner. Press slam into a gutbuster from Woods. Riddle then does a deadlift German suplex off the middle rope and drops Xavier Woods right on his head. That was slightly terrifying, but seemed to be fine, so thank goodness for that. They go back and forth, and then suddenly, out of nowhere, Riddle hits an RKO on Xavier Woods for the 1-2-3. He celebrates, and he dedicates the win to his partner in crime, I suppose, Randy Orton. I love this. This was my favourite part of Monday Night Raw, Hamlet.
What a fabulous match, man. Like, what an absolutely fabulous match. Raw has got no right to be the stage with which this match took place on. Riddle, frankly, has got no right to be as good as he is in a way that, like, distracts you from what you might think of him. Xavier Woods does this thing, like, and he's such clearly a very selfless, not just a selfless wrestler, but like a selfless man. Like, we hear all these stories of what he did for the likes of Tyler Breeze in NXT and just how he would, like, work with everybody to try and get them over. Clearly just this endlessly creative human being. So, of course, he's there for other talents. You know, the New Day exists mostly because of Xavier Woods and all the ideas that he brought to the table, like, inspired Big E and Kofi Kingston with much needed confidence, like, to be the best versions of themselves. And yet, whenever he wrestles, you start to question what it is he can't do.
Mm.
Like, he flies, he's jacked, and he's got the strength to be able to pull off, like, that, as you say, that, like, much gift suplex spot, which is really important now. Like, that sort of stuff's currency in modern wrestling. Something that it's going to be a takeaway that's actually going to make a match memorable on a Raw. This match was really memorable. This is one of the best Raw matches of the year, hands down for me. And because the work was so good, because it was so, like, stiff at points, like, borderline dangerous, but they were just clearly putting so much trust in each other. And why would you not when you've evidently got the abilities and the skill sets of these two? Love the finish, man. Like, love this finish. RK Bro a clicking. Like I mentioned on our preview pod, I think it was, that there's absolutely no rush to do the split now because you start looking for things that crowds are going to want to care about, and it's this. crowds are going to want to care about this in person. Just fantastic. And like, not even too long. Mm. Like, Raw is a show that often, you know, as you could argue this very episode, is overindulgent for because of a need for content, because of a need for churn. This didn't even do that. Didn't even pass through that last commercial break. You think, oh, I just wish they'd gone now. Wish they'd gone now. Like, just timed it out perfectly. Love this.
I'm going to drop the 45 seconds deal because this is worthy of more than 45 seconds of rushed. I just can't be arsed with this anymore because this had absolutely no right. That's the only thing that was flown through my head when I was watching this match. This had no right because, as I said earlier, if you watched in a, pretend this is a live set, and if you'd watched that finish to that opening match, you'd think, right, well, there's no point in investing in anything on this show. Absolutely not. I'm in a mood. Everyone would be in a mood and no one would react. This would pick up a dead crowd back to life. And God damn it, those WWE crowds of 2019 were dead as well. Let's never forget that, ever. This had no right to be this good because of what followed in the show. It is part of a decent storyline, I would say, beyond the tomatoes element. Who can forget about tomatoes? Xavier Woods is an absolutely magnificent babyface. And on this evidence, it's a total indictment that he hasn't held a singles title yet. Even if we don't think they mean anything, it's still, at the very least, a temporary signal that will change from red to green and back again as quickly as an actual traffic light system. But nonetheless, it's still very much an investment. If not a prestigious symbol, it is nonetheless an investment. Xavier Woods was on unreal form in this match. Spirited. His facials were unbelievable. He worked to Matt Riddle's level as an actual in-ring guy, and that level is unbelievable. But it was just the spirit of the match, not the actual dangerous high spots, but just the way Xavier Woods was just so insistent on selling it as this must-win tone of a fight, like, harrowing match. Just an unbelievable effort from both guys.
And then we found out Rhea Ripley's going to defend her title against Charlotte in Hell in a Cell. What? Why? That was last week if she beat Asuka. But anyway, it doesn't matter. And then we got AJ Styles versus Jackson Ryker. It'd been advertised earlier, and I was like, what's, they're both heels again. We literally had AJ Styles with Elias going, what, 10 minutes at the start of last week's show. Styles batters him, as he should. It's AJ Styles and Jackson Ryker. And then they get him back in the ring, and Elias suddenly pops up, hits him with a knee strike, goes and hides into the, in the timekeeper's area. Ryker hits a black hole slam. Jackson Ryker pins AJ Styles. Post-match, out comes Big George, who was presumably not at ringside, so they could do this thing. He comes down, they do... Yeah, a very nice shot of, like, from hiding in the timekeeper's area. He sort of looms over there to get Elias. He and Ryker legs it, but Elias trips and falls and gets hoyed into the video screen things at the top of the ramp that all go fuzzy off the back of almost chucking Elias into it. Awful, this, Sig.
Start. It doesn't matter that there was an interference because we've established that 5 minutes of angle pretext can go 20 on this show. So it doesn't really matter. 2 minutes is worse than the interference. I think AJ Styles is playing a babyface because he's de facto a babyface because he's fighting heels. And it's lucky, again, that it's meaningless that this happened to AJ Styles. He'll remain AJ Styles. He's kind of a living legend in WWE lore and indie lore at this point because this would somehow contrive to kill a babyface before the babyface had even turned. He'd be fighting babyfaces again in about a month's time. Who the hell knows? This was the definition of meaningless because he couldn't even be insulted or anxious on AJ's behalf because none of it even matters. Cancel.
Yeah, you can like the faintest of praise for one nice shot. Because ultimately, like, it was such a cartoonish contrivance to get there that it almost doesn't make it worthwhile. You know, like, somebody has come up with the idea. They haven't come up with the idea. Christ, they shot Andre the Giant from a low angle forever. But, like, the lowest possible angle to shoot Omos and have Elias try to hide from him. That's where this starts. Everything exists to get to that shot. Are you telling me a room full of people and a guy that's made literally billions of dollars off this type of shtick couldn't have thought of a better way to arrive at that shot, because it was a good shot. But you're left not really wanting to give it much praise or wanting to reward the idea of the benefit of having a guy so big and a heel so terrified of him because of the match that came before it, the steps that they took to get there invalidates what was otherwise exactly how you present Omos, like to the letter how you present Omos. And you're left thinking, oh, so that's why you did all that and you pinned a guy that you like and you came up with a stupid finish. And where was Omos to begin with? You're asking like six questions when you shouldn't need to ask any. Just find a place in a frigging building that you've rented for the last 6 months to hide so where Elias can hide from a giant. It cannot be that difficult. It can't be.
Ridiculous. Like you say, all for that shot they made. Big Jaw looks so big and, well, Elias looks so small. Right, we had Sheamus versus Humberto Carrillo. Time for another rematch, guys. 4 minutes. Carrillo gets a bit of offense in, but in the end, Sheamus rolls him up, handful of tights. 1, 2, 3. Post-match, Sheamus attacks Carrillo. Ricochet makes the save. They both hit Sheamus with moonsaults. Ricochet hits a 450 splash, but decides not to nick his clothes and his hat this week. Oh my God, Hamflet.
This match wasn't noteworthy, so I just want to say that I thought it was interesting that Ricochet wasn't picked on to be one of those wrestlers to say that he couldn't wait for fans to come back because he probably doesn't notice they've left. He's been like, I've got restaurants all the time. What are you talking about? So it's like he was a curious omission from that. I am getting increasingly worried, and it's not particularly the fault of Humberto Carrillo or even Ricochet, as irritating as the backlash thing was. I'm getting increasingly worried about the fate of a Sheamus character that I was quite invested in. It's probably back to the Woods Riddle stuff, really. Maybe he's just got no right. Maybe they've got no right to the matches that Sheamus can have, the quality of the work that Sheamus does on this show. Because I don't like this angle at all. Don't like him as a bully, as an open challenge guy, as a guy beating up the little guys. That there's so many little guys that you're supposed to think that Ricochet's a baby face for what he does at the end. I don't like any of this. I think it's a waste of the good match formula that Sheamus had bizarrely unlocked earlier this year.
Start. Ricochet is just the most unlikable cock in this entire company, maybe even more so than Road Dogg or Stephanie McMahon at the minute. The way they book him is terrifying to me. Not terrifying because I've given up, but it should be terrifying to other people. This is what they think baby faces do. Baby faces, I should not have to remind you, are the good people, are the good guys, are the John Moxleys of this world. Ricochet is a little entitled tosser who can't accept the loss because he's a toddler booked by someone with the mind frame of a toddler in Vince McMahon. And how are they ever going to have someone worthy of Roman Reigns? Roman Reigns versus a good baby face is literally the last thing this company's got, and they can't book baby faces because look at Ricochet.
Right, we had a backstage interview with the former women's tag team champions Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler. Baszler was upset. She said they lost again because Jax was distracted by that git Reginald. Jax was in all... Huh?
This is heading to the main event.
Yeah, we're nearly there, mate. So Jax says, oh, don't be a bully. He got his got fire and eyes and what have you last week. Baszler doesn't care. She said, look, we were an unstoppable force until he got involved and you started getting distracted by him. She said, look, we're going out there tonight without you and we're going to win back those tag team titles. She said, Reginald, just remember this, Reginald, you stay in the back, whatever happens, or else. End of promo. Okay. Then we got another Eva Marie Evolution thing. She's talking about being a trainer or something. Don't care. Main event time. Natalya and Tamina versus Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler for the women's tag team champions. Early on in the match, Natalya and Baszler are in there like 3-4 minutes in. Baszler's in control. She's going to do that arm stomp thing. Reginald walks out. What? Why? Not even in any trouble. Just decides, comes out, goes, oh, no, I do need to be here for reasons. So that allows Natalya to get out the arm breaker spot thing and to go into the break. They come back. Baszler's still in control. Natalya slams her, tags in Tamina. Jax comes in. It's just really sloppy.
Natalya and Tamina and Nia Jax. Tamina hits Jax with an uppercut and a super kick, gets a two count. Baszler tags in. Tamina gives her a power slam, tags in Natalya. And Tamina and Nia Jax keep brawling on the outside. Jax backdrops Tamina over the barricade. So it's just Natalya. 2-on-1, just Natalya. Natalya hits a discus clothesline on Baszler. Reginald jumps up on the apron to prevent her from getting a submission, I assume. I think she's going for a sharpshooter, but Baszler reverses it into a small package, which the referee doesn't see, of course, because Reginald's up on the apron. Baszler's furious. She demands that Reginald leaves. He starts to leave. We almost got through the entire show without it. Spooky bollocks! Pyro goes off on the stage. He falls on his fucking ass off the back of it, sells it again. And Baszler is distracted by this somehow, still yelling at him and bollocking him. Surprise, surprise, Natalya, roll up, small package. 1, 2, 3. Natalya and Tamina retain the women's tag team titles. And after the match, Baszler walks down to the ramp, grabs Reginald and said, next week, we're going to be fighting and you're going to wish I'm going to make you look like Ellsworth. No, sorry. Will you make you wish you were in that explosion with what I'm going to do to you? And that was the end of the show, Hamflet. Thank God.
Yeah, bad match. Virtually the same finish. Obviously, just all the more frustrating because the person, you know, I don't anymore, but you might still want to like it. And Shayna Baszler is just rendered useless. You say, Wilborn, that we thought we'd gone all show without spooky bollocks. Don't think so, brother. Lily was backstage in the conversation with Shayna and Nia and Reginald earlier on, watching, looking on. So there's further confirmation of your feud about something that won't mean anything in 3 months. I hate this, but I don't have the energy to hate by the end of a 3-hour Raw. Like if this drops in the first hour, whatever bit of it is that you're angry with, Shayna Baszler getting buried, a bad tag team title match, Lily, fire, whatever, you're like, oh, full of beans, full of, like, this is the best place for this stuff because I don't have the energy left to hate after watching.
Yeah.
You know, on double speed, 3 hours. I don't have, like, the energy to be angry. I don't have any interest in Shayna Baszler versus Reginald. I feel like if there's one crumb of comfort, if it's even a crumb of comfort to you, maybe this is the end of Shayna and Nia.
Mm.
Nia will pick Reginald. Shayna Baszler's going to lose to a Cirque du Soleil extra. But that's going to be the end of their team.
Start. Quite funny watching the arm get worked and then Nia Jax does this like leg drop into the twisted arm spot and then the match ends virtually via explosion and roll up. Explosion, then roll up. Well, that arm work for now. Oh, Christ, I was so gripped by it. It was so immersive. It looked like she was in such agony. It was building up. Jesus Christ. I don't know what to say about a match I've seen a million times. The supernatural shadow that hung over everything is just totally lame. Reginald versus Shayna Baszler is an absolute nightmare scenario for anyone who might have invested it in NXT. It's like just insane bingo. Insane bingo. I don't know what I'm saying. I have 45 seconds. So I'm going to shit.
You forgot the beat the clock challenge. I can understand why Rhea Ripley struggled then this week.
It's the worst show I've ever seen. Like, and I watch kids' TV show regularly because I have to watch them because sometimes they'll say, oh, Dad, that was funny. I was like, oh, I'm just looking at Twitter. So yeah, okay. I watched 5 minutes of this and it's like stories have continuity.
Yeah, I won't have people bash kids' TV because I watch enough of this to know that kids' TV is at least structurally tight.
Yes.
I won't have people give it grief.
I will say this. I did end this show on a happy note because...
It finished.
Well, A, it was finished. Yes, exactly, Sige. But B, due to the unique way that the holidays fall here in the UK, we got a bank holiday on Monday, which means we wouldn't be doing the Raw preview because I'm certainly not previewing that on my day off. So... we're going to record it in advance. But Hamlet's off on Friday, and I daren't ask Sidgwick to record it on a Friday as well because he's going to have to do the SmackDown preview. So we're going to record the Raw preview on Thursday. But at least not one of the matches that's going to be on the show. It's all good.
Why do I have to do a Raw preview? Who cares?
4 days before the script is torn up and 3 before it's even written. that we're going to have to.
Actually, we know two matches, don't we? We've got Kofi and Drew as well.
Oh, here we go, man. We've got more Monday previews.
Again, an hour and a half on this. It's Raw. Who gives a fuck? This is a probably a conversation we should be having when the record button stops, but we have to do something different to the Raw preview. We'll have to. I do think so. I don't know what, but we do.
Or we could just do it as a 45-second thing like usage.
Yeah. Just get the mid-roll out, and then I'm busting for a piss.
Hello, nothing matters.
Right, let us know your thoughts on Monday Night Raw on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Watch there, you can follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at
Michael Hamflett.
Follow Michael Sidgwick at
Adam Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilburn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling wherever you get your podcast from for daily wrestling podcasts, where you can also, of course, leave your 5-star review, suggest something short, crap and wrestling related for us to review instead of a god-awful segment on Monday Night Raw. And subscribe to that, of course, for daily wrestling podcasts, including our NXT preview later on today. But for now, this has been the Raw Review. My thanks to the Dudley Boys. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.